On today's episode of The Good Word, Sam Amick from The Athletic joins us to talk about the first day of NBA free agency, including Paul George moving from LA to Philly, Chris Paul joining Wembanyama in San Antonio, and we talk about the Pistons hiring J.B. Bickerstaff as their new coach, along with Tobias Harris giving Paul George some advice on getting booed in Philly. All that and much more coming up on the episode.
Good Word with Goodwill on Yahoo Sports. Ball don't lie. And here... it's Vince Goodwill.
Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. We are part of the Ball Don't Lie podcast. Get us wherever you get your podcast. We're also on YouTube. So if you're looking at us on YouTube, you see the face of the man sitting right next to me across the way, the great Sam Amick. Sam is in Sacramento or Sacramento adjacent. Of course, he's a senior NBA writer for The Athletic. And of course, he's one of the writers on the Athletics NBA show. Sam, how you doing, man?
Vinny Goodwill. What's up, brother? It's funny you say we're side by side. You know, that's remote, obviously. It feels a little strange not to be side by side with you. I feel like we hung out for the last 2 months on the playoff path, but appreciate you having me, brother.
Hey, man. Look, a lot of bottles of wine were consumed.
Don't be spilling the tea. Come on now.
That's like, not
what
tea.
Talking about?
It ain't tea. Yeah. It's wine.
That's an expression. But we just lock in at work all the time. What do you mean? We would never engage in those sort of activities.
Debauchery. No debauchery. Yes. No debauchery. Yes. No chicanery. Yes. No
There's
tampering.
No pictures of this. None of that. No.
Definitely no tampering. Because tampering doesn't happen in the NBA. Right?
It does
of course not.
No.
Right?
Nope.
So we're going to start off with some of the five most intriguing moves of free agency. We know that's why everybody is here. Free agency began yesterday at 6 p.m. And for some teams, it probably began before that. That's why they waited, because they did not want the NBA coming down on their ass for tampering. That's why you only saw some teams sign their own players for the first 5 or so hours. And then you get to see some of the movement. The biggest movement happened overnight. Paul George leaving the L.A. Clippers to sign a 4-year, $212 million deal with the Philadelphia 76ers. Does this just feel like a perfect fit from that standpoint? Let's go to Philly first. Does this feel like the perfect fit for a 76ers team that is trying to chase the Boston Celtics, trying to get over the hump of getting out of the second round? They haven't gotten out of the second round since 2001 with Allen Iverson and that group. This just feels like, stylistically, as Paul George is either their second or third best player with Maxey and Joel Embiid, like, how do you see the fit?
No, I love it. It's funny. My apologies to the host here, because I was late to the show today, right, Vinny? And the reason was I was trying to put a few thoughts and words together on this deal. We kind of knew it was coming last night. Admittedly, I probably should have written this column preemptively. You know what I mean? But I just got done writing my thoughts on Paul George. And to your question, I do like it a lot. I did highlight Daryl Morey in my column, because after this year, where he and James Harden had this debacle between them, the optics were bad for both sides. Daryl found himself, he's pretty quiet at the February trade deadline in terms of the assets they got in the Harden deal with the Clippers, kind of keeps the powder dry at that point, which surprised some people. And then the whole entire time, there was some chatter that he had his eyes on somebody in particular. Now, to be clear, I do not have total clarity on if Paul George was that guy the entire time. But I do find it interesting, because he waited, hits the summertime. And you talk about high stakes, Vinny. Like, Daryl found himself in an all or nothing game, in my opinion. Like, the plan B, if they did not get Paul George, like, I don't know what it was. I mean, I'd heard a little chatter about Klay Thompson, somebody like that. But that's not the type of guy who is going to make Joel Embiid happy. And I think, continue this Embiid era in Philly. And I honestly think, not to be hyperbolic, but man, if they don't get Paul George, we saw they went 11-20 without Joel midseason. When we saw that, as great as Tyrese Maxey is as a young talent, he needs help, can't carry a team by himself. That's a long-winded way of saying, yeah, I think Paul is a great fit. Certainly you can kind of raise, eyebrows and question marks around the idea that when he's 38 years old, they're going to be paying him a ton of money. That's what the Clippers didn't want to do. But the other mafioso part of this to me is for Daryl to say goodbye to James Harden, who pushed his way out, and then fill the vacancy by ruining the Clippers' plan to keep those three guys together is pretty wild. So, it's a pretty crazy finish here.
It's Machiavellian in a way. And I've heard, and I'm sure you've heard too, that Daryl has been lusting after Paul George since about midseason.
Sure.
You know, and that the Clippers knew that Philly was going to be coming for Paul George in the summer if, you know, things hadn't been, you know, consummated, right?
Right.
This is what I, part of this makes me feel a little squeamish. And maybe squeamish isn't the word, but, you know, the whole concept of loyalty and the, should the Clippers have done the trade to get Paul George there because they gave up Shea and all the picks and everything else. And this is a failure and all that. Like, we can touch on that. But I tend to believe when Kawhi Leonard signed his extension, I want to see if you rock with me on this one. Do you tend to believe, Sam, that the Clippers came to all three of those guys and said, this is how much money we have for the three of you? Because we cannot get to the second luxury tax apron, which eliminates every single mechanism that we can use to make our team better. No signing trades, no aggregating salaries. You can't even sign guys off of the scrap heap in the March buyout period.
Right.
Do you tend to believe that the Clippers came to them and said, this is how much money we have. You guys are going to have to split this up amongst yourselves, and this is how much we're going to offer you. And Paul was the guy to be like, I'm not with this plan.
100%. Yeah, absolutely. And what's weird is you kind of, like, I get that with negotiations, there's always a timing component, meaning that, like, you got to wait till the 11th hour to see who blinks. But it kind of feels like, you know, if this is really how this is going to end with Paul and the Clippers, maybe one of the sides should have just said, no, trust me, like, we are not changing our stance. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like, because that's really all that happened. They never made progress. The gap was still really big. And the underlying kind of belief system on both sides just never changed. You know, Paul, and it's his right, certainly, basically said, like, I want the full boat. I want the 4-year max. And you know, the whole league knew that because his camp was going around talking to all kinds of teams, basically every contender, every big city market, trying to see, you know, what it might look like. And all across the board, the message was, 4 years, full money. Like, that's the beginning of the conversation. From there, it's, can you handle whatever a sign and trade might look like to give stuff back to the Clippers? None of those scenarios played out. The Clippers, in turn, and you already kind of highlighted this, you know, they just, the way it was put to me by someone with the team was like, now they get to, it's funny because you lose Paul George, that is a negative, but now they get to function like a regular team again, mm-hmm. you know, like, from a roster construction yeah. standpoint.
Yeah.
Because, and even us in the media, Vinny, you know this, the second apron reality is still relatively new. And I don't think, I guess, speaking just for myself, like, we do a good enough job just yet of helping the fans understand, like, what the hell we're talking about here. Because it is just like, it's absolute, you know, hell for front offices to be in the second apron. You might as well just clock out and go home and see how the team plays on the court. Because you lose damn near every tool available to make the team better. And that's where the Clippers were stuck. Like, yes, we want this superstar trio, but no, we don't want to be handcuffed in that way. And Paul obviously had other things in mind. I mean, I don't know how you feel as a side thing, you know, seeing James Harden take a 2-year deal at, you know, well below his max number mm-hmm. Is something I didn't necessarily expect, considering, again, you know, the way he left Philly demanding the kind of full boat contract that Paul ultimately got. So I think the Clippers probably have mixed emotions today. They had a lot of nice things to say about Paul on the way out, but you know, they still have a decent team too.
Yeah, I think James, and this kind of dovetails into Klay Thompson, where you wind up taking less elsewhere because of the equity that you had with your current team or the current employer being Daryl Morey for Harden, where you have all this equity in with this guy and you're expecting to cash in on that equity. Whereas if you go somewhere else, you'll take less because they're giving you what they have. Like, Golden State probably, I'm sure we can all agree, Golden State is probably offering Klay Thompson more than the non-taxpayer mid-level exception, which is $12.8 million.
Yeah, no doubt.
But yeah. It's about how you feel. It's about how the money makes sure. you feel. And for Paul George, the money made him feel something with the 76ers that the money wasn't going to make him feel with the LA Clippers. Being home wasn't going to matter. Playing with, you know, playing in front of family and friends, playing with, you know, Kawhi Leonard trying to get this thing turned around as they opened that new building in October of this coming year. That didn't make him feel anything. And now he's going to this pressure cooker in Philadelphia where basketball-wise, I think he fits, right?
Yep.
I think from the standpoint of being the wing that can, okay, now you're guarding Jason Tatum. Now you're guarding Jaylen Brown. You know what I mean? And then they have to guard you. Like now you can see clearly everybody's chasing Boston or at least the ideology of Boston. And right. That's where Paul is coming in at. From the Clippers standpoint, you're right. They can now operate like a much more cleaner and efficient and creative team. It doesn't make them better, but I didn't think that the operation was going to work anyway. And Sam, at some point, and I'm going to close it out here, at some point, we're going to have a conversation about how bad this CBA is for the players. It yeah. looks really good because you look at the numbers. Tyrese Maxey signed for $200 million. Paul George going to a new team signing for $200 million cleanly into cap space. But the things you don't see, I feel like, is the way that the CBA is screwed the players or the players screwed themselves because you're losing continuity. You're losing all these mechanisms to keep your team together. The money is still out there, but it just looks and feels different.
No, that's fair. I mean, these are not ideal examples, but the first two that come to mind, and they're two kind of old heads, you know, Chris Paul getting waived, and he's in a good spot, signing in San Antonio. I know we're going to make the rounds and talk about yep. free agency, but, you know, that is, to a degree, that's a CBA move. You know, the Warriors could have had other options, but just couldn't, you know, stare down that first or second apron. That move happens. Russell Westbrook, you know, opts in. Now, this is a little more unique because the Clippers, I think, are just ready to be out of the Russ business. But, mm-hmm. like, you know, the idea that that he opts into a $4 million deal and they're still thinking about luxury tax is something to consider. So I agree. It's hard to wrap your head around because the numbers are so massive. So in a vacuum, that is great for the players. But I think your point about continuity is well taken.
Yeah, and for Philly, they're not going anywhere if Joel Embiid doesn't stay healthy. Like, they can do all this other stuff. And Tyrese Maxey is a revelation and a great player and plays with so much joy and happiness. And I'm really happy for him, you know, especially because he delayed signing, you know, this contract, this rookie extension, so that Philly could have the cap space to bring in another guy and all that type of stuff. But it don't matter what Paul George or Maxey does if Joel Embiid ain't healthy. Paul George can be your third best player. He can be your first best player. If he's your second best player, it's a little tricky. Now we're sure. going to the Clippers. James Harden, soon as 6 o'clock hits, 2-70, player option on year two. And they also signed Derrick Jones Jr., 3-30. We talked about the Clippers a little bit, but considering they're going to lose Russ and James, I guess, slides up a spot, like he's going to be the number one guy during those games that Kawhi Leonard misses because Kawhi yeah. Leonard, I'm telling y'all this now, he ain't playing no more than 60 games. You can forget that. He's playing.
I don't
no
know, man.
More.
You see those pictures of him in Costa Rica. He's looking healthy, ready to rock. You know, maybe it's a new Kawhi. But yeah, you're probably right.
Look, if I'm the Clippers, I'm like, bro, you playing in the Olympics on those knees?
Yeah,
that's a weird one. How do you view just the Clippers now? Just they're completely not without just without Paul George. But now James Harden has a more prominent role. Russell Westbrook is going to slide out. Do you see them as sort of trying to recalibrate themselves, or are they taking like a full step back being without PG?
I mean, I'll say recalibrate because honestly, you know, the results of the trio being together were what they were. They won, what was it, 2 playoff series in 5 years?
Yeah.
3 maybe. You know, and I understand it's funny, our friend and colleague and legend David Aldridge had tweeted something yesterday about basically saying, like, yes, you can criticize the move the Clippers initially made, but he was giving Steve Ballmer credit for going for it.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of, you know, cleverly called it a baller move for Ballmer. And I get that. But the result, and you know, in theory, that is the way you should attack team building. And certainly Ballmer's ability and willingness to go for it is just like no other. It just hasn't paid off. So, but they, you know, they weren't a great team last year. I almost wonder, they're certainly not going to be as good, but like, I'm very curious to see, okay, does James Harden step up to the plate at this late stage of his career and realize, you know, again, we talk about legacy all the time and it's not a legacy conversation. It's more of just like a, like, okay, what's the last taste, you know, you're going to have in your mouth about James Harden and his career? Because if you mail it in and you got Kawhi sitting and you got James looking, you know, like just a MJ at the final stages with the Wizards, which is probably a compliment. I don't know. I threw Michael under the bus there, but
that's probably more of a compliment to James than it is to Mike.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah,
Mike in the Wizards uniform was better than you think.
I know. That's where history is getting the best of us. Who's the worst, you know, all time great late? Like who was the poster boy for that?
That's a good one. Maybe it's like Patrick Ewing in a Sonics uniform or Hakeem Olajuwon in a Toronto
Tony
Raptors
Parker
jersey.
And Charlotte, you know, yeah.
Who in Charlotte? Who's in Charlotte?
Tony Parker.
Oh, that's right. Tony Parker was in Charlotte.
Yeah.
That's a good one. That might be the most recent one. That's a good one there, Sam.
So I just think, is James going to, you know, he's had moments the last 2 years where he was really damn good. He's just not consistent and, you know, had a late regular season stretch with the Clippers that was really odd because he stopped shooting the ball and looked terrible. So, you know, what's James going to do? What's Kawhi going to do? I like the Derrick Jones Jr. pickup a lot. We obviously just watched him all the way on the finals run and youth, athleticism, versatility, two-way play, you know, lob threat, obviously like crazy on the break. So I think that'll be fun. You know, I don't know. I mean, the arena component for the Clippers just adds such a unique thing. So, and this is a West Coast deal, but you got to really understand, like, it's such a big deal for the Clippers to not be in the same building as the Lakers anymore. And they're going to Inglewood. They're literally like a stone's throw away from the Forum. You know,
on the same block. I mean, not the same block. They're a block away.
Right. It's right next to it. And it's just got all these, like, what I love this stuff, like this Lakers Clippers rivalry and like this, you know what, we're not only going to move out of your house, cause we all know it was the Lakers house first at Staples and Crypto, but you know, we're going to go live at your old pad, back when you had, you know, the good times. So that was supposed to be the plan. You know what I mean? Steve Ballmer was kind of doing his hostile takeover of the basketball world in LA. And this team is just not capable of doing that. You know, right now, not to make it all about LA, but like, I'm still taking, I think, the Lakers over the Clippers as currently constructed. You know, I think it's somewhat close, but well, you know, they don't, I think this is the Clippers team. We'll see how they look. And it's really, really at the end of the day, it's all about Kawhi. Like, is he going to be available? Is he going to be the MVP level guy that we've seen? Or is he going to be load management guy?
I think if you're asking in this NBA, if you're asking if a guy can be what he was 3 or 4 years ago, you already got your answer. You know what I mean? Like it looks like Kawhi Leonard. It sometimes feels like Kawhi Leonard, but those old guys being able to do it night after night when it really matters, like we're always asking the question, if this team is healthy, if this team is whole. The reason that we'll never get the answer to that question is because we got the answer to the question, because they won't be whole, because these dudes is old.
Ooh,
like
this
is
thing.
No
nice bars.
This is no, there you go. Now you're taking, that's my nickname for Marcus Thompson bars, because he's like, he's just throwing stuff out there. But I'm sure you agree with me on this one, Sam. This league is no longer a place for these old dudes. Like, yeah get your money, right? Get all of your money. You're going to make more money on the back end of your career because of the way that the CBA is. But when it comes down to winning, the Lakers ain't doing no winning. The Clippers ain't. Any team that's led by an old dude, Golden State, Lakers, Clippers, it looks and feels like Muhammad Ali, but he took his ass out there and fought Larry Holmes and it was painful. That's what it looks like for these dudes now, for these teams now. It looks like Kawhi Leonard. It looks like LeBron. It looks like Steph. Every now and again, they can rev it up, but they can't do it for 82 games. And you can't do it for 4 playoff rounds. That's kind of where I'm at with all of these old ass teams.
And that was the takeaway of the postseason, right? Was round by round, it was old head out by Kevin Durant, you know, by this guy, that guy, Steph Curry, LeBron couldn't even get into the dance. You know what I mean? So you're right. As an aside, man, we just pulled something amazing off. Like, we're disparaging Michael Jordan and Muhammad Ali in the same
You disparaged Michael Jordan. You did that. I disparaged Muhammad Ali.
I feel better
Ali
now that
degree.
You brought, you know, Mr. Ali into the conversation.
Yeah,
late, great.
That was my fault.
But you're right. I mean, now that's where, not to go back to Philly for too long, but that's where the Philly thing, you know, is so imperfect, because it's like, you know, again, my
can Paul George get there? He's getting old.
That's my point. He's 34.
Yep.
you know, and Joel is 30 going on 40 because of his health history.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the questions, I actually talked to someone recently who was just in Philly. They're not a Philly person, but they were in Philly and they had the radio on, right? And said like, man, like all the talk radio is actually not who are we going to get for Joel to help him out. It was, why can't we just get Joel out of town like that? And I don't want to like, you know, this is third hand info about sports talk radio in Philly, but the vibe that they came out of Philly with was like, because of the health stuff, because of everything that comes with the Joel experience, that you know, some fans clearly were ready to move on. And that's where for Philly, you had to like, nobody thought they were going to put him on the market. That's not the road you're going down. So Paul is the best option available. But to your point, old does not work in today's NBA. It just doesn't. You know, we see Steph Curry playing at an absolutely elite level, LeBron playing at an elite level. These are all NBA players, but they still are not able to get it done. So yeah, it's a young man's game.
Look, young man's game. For one, last point on the Clippers, and you brought it up when you talked about David Aldridge's tweet, which I saw also. You do that deal 100 times out of 100. For Kawhi and Paul George individually, they didn't hold up their end of the bargain. But for the Clippers in 2019, the only sniff of relevance that they had was the Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, Doc Rivers era, which is now an FX TV special right now.
Yes.
Like that was the only sniff of relevance that they had. We now look at the Clippers as a credible franchise run by serious people. And you can say whatever you want about how, you know, they only made it to the Western Conference Finals one time. It was without Kawhi Leonard. It was in that, you know, weird 21, you know, playoff run. But the Clippers are now going to be in conversations for free agents as time goes on, because you can look at them now and say, this is a franchise run by serious people. Ty Lue is there. Like, I think it ends up being a net positive for the franchise. It's a net negative for the individual players because they did not hold up to, you know, individual where they were at that point. Kawhi Leonard was a finals MVP when he got there, you know, from dragging Toronto there. Paul George was a top three MVP guy from his season in Oklahoma City. So you're looking at like, man, they got it. They got it. Those two guys got it. And they didn't hold up their end of the bargain. That's their fault, not necessarily the franchise. Now, speaking of old guys, Chris Paul.
Yep.
Going to play with Big Vic. Is Chris Paul going there to tell Big Vic, don't go into that strip club. Go home and work out. Can you imagine Big Vic looking all the way down and having to take orders from
Chris Paul? Now that you're bringing
strip
clubs into it, can we stop calling it Big Vic, Vinny? That's a little...
Okay, Big Slim. I'm sorry. That's a good point. Good point. Big Slim is the official name of Victor Wembanyama on this podcast. But, I mean, this is a lot of teams toward the end of Chris Paul's career. He, you know, was due $30 million from the Warriors just as a reset. They could not come to agreement on some type of home for Chris Paul. You know, he wanted to collect his money. They couldn't find a trade. They couldn't find a home for him. So they, you know, outright, you know, released him. And he goes and signs for 1 year and $11 million with the San Antonio Spurs. And we've been talking about, hey, who's Big Vic going to get to play with him? He got old ass Chris Paul.
I like it. I don't know how you feel. Chris had more good moments with the Warriors than people are giving him credit for last season.
That second unit
was really steadied in a way that it certainly hadn't been with young Jordan Poole in that position the year before. Of course, age being a major part of this, health got the best of him. And that's why, by and large, his Warriors tenure will be seen as unsuccessful. But I like it for a couple of reasons. You're right. I mean, Chris Paul late in his career has just become a little bit of a mercenary, just jumping around, not always by his own choice, obviously.
Right.
This one feels right because it's got a lot of upside when it comes to the Chris Paul optics. Like the bar for success, it's a little bit similar to what he had in Oklahoma City.
I was thinking
when
just
he
thinking
got
that, yeah.
Moved there. And people always forget, man, he does deserve a lot of credit for this. Chris goes to OKC and everybody assumed that the first thing he would do is push his way out. And you know what he did? He got in a room with the entire Thunder team and told them, my feet are here. I am here and I'm here to play ball and I'm here to lead. And I'm here to help however I can. And he did. And they almost beat the Rockets in the playoffs,
yep.
You know, in the bubble that year, ironically enough, that would have been a hell of a little revenge tour. So I always like Chris's chapter in OKC because it's a small market. It's not a sexy place to live. And he just made it work. You know what I mean? So it's got a lot of themes that are somewhat similar now to San Antonio. Not glamorous, but certainly a storied franchise. And honestly, like part of what makes me happy about this is that I have not enjoyed the late tenure of Greg Popovich in San Antonio. You have a lot of days where you just feel like, I don't know, man, Pop, he deserves every dollar. He got another bag recently, but you know, last season, some of the vibe around the team just kind of made you wonder, is he still the same guy? Is he still locked in? Is he the best coach for Wemby? If I'm being honest with you, there was some question, I think, about, you know, just we talk about timelines all the time. Like coaches and players don't need to be, you know, within the same decade or two, but you're looking at this 50-year gap between these humans and just kind of wondering, like, can they connect?
Yeah.
Chris Paul, I think, is actually going to help. Yeah, I think he bridges the gap. Now, Victor, by all accounts, is not the kind of guy that you really need to talk too much about staying locked in. He seems just incredibly mature for his age, but I'm sure there's plenty of wisdom that he can pick up from Chris. I hope for Chris's sake and the Spurs' sake that Chris is able to stay healthy enough to make an impact. And I could see them, depending on what the rest of the roster looks like, you know, in these next couple weeks and months, you know, just being an interesting team that finally wins some games. Because I know I was in the minority, Vinny, last year on this topic, but like, of course, I voted for Vic for Rookie of the Year. Everybody did. But it took me a minute to get there just because it was really hard to watch. Just about halfway through the season, I'm a little bit of a sucker for, like, first of all, incredible defensive player, but then you're looking at the overall body of work on the defensive side of the floor, and it wasn't there. They're a very bad defense. Now, I know the on-offs were just insane in terms of when he was on the floor, and the bar was so high when it comes to, you know, Vic and who he'd been compared to. You know, you're legitimately talking about a LeBron-type level coming into the league. I expected, you know, a little more winning right out the gate. Not a ton, but enough where you just kind of say, this guy moves the needle from the jump. So I feel like Chris, you know, is going to help in that regard. And I like it. I think it'll be a good move.
No, I think Chris Paul is no longer, you know, the jokes are the jokes, but Chris Paul no longer drives winning the way that he used to. He might have been, you know, during his day, especially for his size, in that period of time, the single, you know, greatest driver of wing during that period. Stephen Curry's like 3 inches taller than Chris Paul. That's why I don't put them in the same height category. But he can influence winning. And one of the big things that we saw last year, one of our own collective media frustrations watching Victor Wembanyama last year was Devin Vassell, Keldon Johnson, hey, give Vic the ball. Like, throw it up to him. Now you have a guy that's literally going to put him in every great position possible. They're going to run that pick and roll. Chris Paul is still an incredibly effective, efficient player at this stage. He's going to get to his spots. He's going to get to the elbow, and he's going to make sure that Big Vic gets the ball. So I do think that will help, especially with Pop being a little bit older, and does he have the energy to be chasing these kids around all the time and being
right?
If we're frustrated, imagine how like frustrated coach, he man. Is.
Yeah. I know we got to keep it moving, but a quick side note.
Yeah, yeah.
I think from a culture standpoint, the Spurs need somebody like Chris. They really do. That locker room, you know, and I'm going to share a story that you know, maybe the Spurs wouldn't want me to share. But media-wise last year, the Spurs were really challenging. You know what I mean? And specifically, it was so much hype on Victor that a lot of his teammates struggled with the idea that the vast majority of the time that you are interviewed by reporters, you're going to be asked about Victor. And so there were some choices made from an access standpoint where the Spurs started trying to like shield his teammates from having to, you know, do the type of media stuff that they are obligated to do. And like bending over backwards to try to make young people comfortable in this really unique environment when they were, you know, playing with a transcendent talent. To me, that type of stuff is like, you know, if you have Chris Paul in the locker room, you know, telling a young guy, like, listen, like, this is how you handle the media. Just do this, just do that. Like, he's been through everything. He's seen everything.
Yeah.
That kind of voice. Because let's be honest, Pop doesn't have the energy or the inclination to have that kind of a conversation. Chris can fill in the gaps in that kind of way, I think.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And like you said, a 50-year gap between Pop and Wembanyama. Chris Paul is probably right square in the middle in terms of age, because Chris will be 40 next year. So it's almost like you're splitting the baby. Not quite splitting the baby, but very close enough to it from an age standpoint. Moving on to Denver, they lose another big piece in losing Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. 3 years, $66 million. Again, we're talking about luxury tax, second aprons, teams that have built up, you know, starting fives, championship organizations, and they have to lose guys like that due to financial concerns, because you've got Porter on a $200 million max. You're still going to have to pay Aaron Gordon. I think he's going to be up after next year. Jamal Murray's up for a super max that he has not yet agreed to. And of course, you got the best player in the world, Nikola Jokic. KCP winds up getting lost in the shuffle, and he goes to an Orlando team that is ready to take off. He's going to be their vet, and every team needs a vet. And I think that is a great fit for him and a great fit for them. But I think for Denver, man, this is another piece of that puzzle that's being stripped away.
No, it's not good. You know, their kind of cheat code, or at least the thing they hoped was going to be their cheat code, was, you know, knowing that they would lose guys like Bruce Brown, like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, that you know, they would rack up as many first and seconds as they could and try to build through the draft, the Christian Browns and Peyton Watsons and Julian Strothers. And now, though, the stakes are just that much higher. You know, those guys, Brown in particular, has had really good moments, but all of a sudden, you know, it's time for these young bucks to grow up really, really fast. That's the only way these Nuggets are going to be able to kind of keep up with the Joneses. And it's there's no other way around it but to say that it's been two tough summers for the Nuggets front office. And again, a lot of it, like you said, is CBA inspired. I don't know. I mean, there's different moves you hear about along the way that, you know, you could relitigate and say maybe they should have done. In fact, you know, one I kind of hit on the other day that never really got any traction, but, like, you know, they absolutely analyzed the Paul George situation and knew that there was a scenario in play where he would enjoy playing in Denver, but that was going to have to be sign and trade. That was going to cost him Michael Porter Jr., Zeke Nagy. And to be honest, my understanding is that part they were straight with. Fine, we'll give Paul the full max. But then you start talking about some draft capital and extra stuff, and they're very reticent to lose what they have in the cupboard. They have this kind of ethos that they don't want to go down the road of Milwaukee and Phoenix and just give everything up and be paying the price for many, many years to come. So, but you can see the point being that, like, the different ways that they're trying to not lose traction during this Nikola Jokic era, where, you know, Calvin Booth has been really, their GM has been really outspoken about how seriously he takes it to maximize, you know, this incredible player that they have. And they anticipated, like, when they won the title, you know, it's crazy how narratives change so quickly. It's
very quickly.
We thought, okay, this could be a 4 or 5 year run for these Nuggets. You know, then Minnesota's kind of built to beat them with Tim Connelly, their former GM, doing that work. You know, that obviously ends up happening. And Denver is just in a challenging spot for sure.
Yeah, David Stern's NBA is different than Adam Silver's NBA, where Stern's NBA was very much about the dynasties and the runs and the continuity between teams, and not just continuity between players and teams, but continuity between fan and teams, and being able to see the same teams with the same cast of characters, maybe some alterations here or there. Now it's almost like you have to refamiliarize yourself with every team every season, because there's so much turnover now that it's hard to marry yourself to a five-man unit, so to speak. And that's just, I think that's a function of the new ownership that you have. It's a function of the money, but you lose a little bit of something. I think you lose a little bit of, like I said, the term sweat equity, and, you know, KCP being a critical element of that Denver team, you know, changes the math for them. And, you know, we talked about Golden State a little bit, but now Stephen Curry's final years with the Warriors, they don't look pretty. He looks like every bit of an excellent player, but it doesn't look like they're going to maximize that because of some of the moves that they have and haven't made since winning the title in 2022. But we'll be right back with Sam Amick after we pay some bills. We're going to talk about Isaiah Hartenstein going to Oklahoma City and the Pistons hiring J.B. Bickerstaff. We'll be right back. Back on The Good Word, we're here with Sam Amick from The Athletic. Sam, Isaiah Hartenstein, which I did not know was a member of a certain tribe, he leaves the New York Knicks. The New York Knicks could only afford basically to pay him, I think it was like $4 and $110 million. He goes to Oklahoma City. 3 years, $87 million. If you had thought the big man was dead, let me tell you, it is alive. He is alive. That is $29 million a season for a guy that averaged, what, like 8-7 this year? I think he's really good, mind you. I really think Hartenstein's actually really good. I think he's better than his numbers. But I think Oklahoma City actually going in and getting the guy who makes them not as light in the ass anymore, that's big for them. Like, Chet Holmgren won't be getting his ass kicked anymore as much because Hartenstein is there.
No, I love the pickup. I mean, you know, compartmentalize the price tag for a minute. That's a different discussion basketball wise. Man, Sam Presti is just putting on a clinic lately. You know what I mean? And you can argue, I get it. A lot of people are saying overpay, but you know, it's a little bit like you get to the end of the month, you got the extra income you have, you know what I mean? And the Thunder had it. And you know, they have an incredibly cheap team for now.
Yeah.
You know, and this is a luxury where you can go ahead and do a deal like this and maximize what appears to be a pretty special opportunity. We saw last year that they were legitimately contenders. And we all kept sleeping on them just because, you know, it seemed like they're all average age of 16 years old. You know, it was just wild. But they are here. They are for real. And now they have a guy who can fix the problem that was front and center in the postseason when they got destroyed on the glass. I think he does it in an athletic enough, versatile enough way that, you know, it does not preclude them, you know, from the five out scenarios that they love so much. You just got to find a way with Mark Dagnall pulling the strings, you know, to stagger properly and just kind of have a good balance. But I was always in that camp that felt like, you know, you can't just keep leaning into five out and acting like, you know, that elephant in the room is going to go away. You had to find a way, a sophisticated enough and kind of nuanced enough way to fix that. I think he likely does it. Not to mention, you know, coming off a postseason run with the Knicks where, and you talk about just good old fashioned stuff like competitive fabric and motor and spirit. You know, Isaiah was, I think, is it Zach Lowe who does like the, he used to do the all Luke Walton team, you know, like just like, these like role players who you enjoy watching, you know, Isaiah would be on everybody's short list. So, and you mentioned Chet. I mean, you know, Chet does a lot of things incredibly well. I think Isaiah is going to make Chet's life a little easier and take some of the heat off him. So I like that move too, for sure.
I mean, you think about it, you sign him for 3 years. You don't have to worry about paying J-Dub for another 2 years. You don't have to worry about paying Chet for another 2 years. Like, it lines up, especially when I know we've been talking about luxury tax aprons and, you know, how restrictive they've been. And we've been simultaneously talking about this TV deal and how it affects. We've been talking more about what the TV deal means for TV more than what it means for teams. And with the TV deals coming in, remember the cap spike of 2016? It was a cap spike. This one, there will be more money flushed into the system, but it will be more flushed in incrementally. So the cap will go up over the next couple of years, maybe like 10% here, 10% there, you know, whatever the projections are. So Oklahoma City will actually be able to afford some of these guys that they're paying, where $29 million seems like really exorbitant, but because it's not a max, it's not completely tied to the cap, where it's just going to go all the way up as the cap goes up. I just think it's a great move for them. And look, man, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, he doesn't need all the space in the world to operate. Like, he takes contested shots. J-Dub takes contested shots. Chet Holmgren is skinny dude who's going to wind up making space because he's skinny dude. You know, like that's sort of thing. So that's going to be interesting. And you said five out. Apparently, our friends at No Cap Room, they call their news section five out. I'm not going to copy them because, you know, we don't do that here. That would be plagiarism. So John called this the outlet. So we're just passing quickly up court. And the first topic here is J.B. Bickerstaff, after being fired from the Cleveland Cavaliers, lands with the Detroit Pistons, replacing Monty Williams and they did not have to bribe him. They did not have to offer him a exorbitant amount of money three times, but they gave him a 5-year deal.
Don't and you he's wish used somebody to sort would of bribe us for Say that again? Kind of cash? Don't you wish somebody would bribe us for that kind of cash?
Please bribe me. Okay. Please nepotism me. Like whatever that thing is, give it to me. All right. I will take it and I will do well with it. But I like the move for Detroit because it feels like you didn't go for the big splashy name and you got a coach with some level of experience. When you have a young team and a new president, having a new or first time head coach didn't feel like that was something that that franchise needed.
No, I agree. Again, it's like in a vacuum. I mean, JB's a very good coach. It's a solid move. I think developmentally, he's a better fit than Monty. One of the things that I never understood about the Monty hire in Detroit was that, you know, his superpower in Phoenix was the ability to connect with some of the stars out there and to be a culture builder. But it was to take a program that was already on the way up to the next level. I think JB has had more experience in his Cavs life, you know, bringing the Darius Garlands of the world up and you know, even the Jared Allens, guys like that. Mm-hmm. So I like the hire. It's still hard to just look at it and, you know, you and I will never be in a seat like Tom Gore's where the cash is what it is. But like, my God, the price tag to make a switch with Monty Williams, it just, you know, I mean, you can't undo what was done before. So the past doesn't matter in terms of whether or not JB is going to be effective in that job. But admittedly, it's just going to take me a minute to just get it out of my head, like what the whole Monty Williams chapter was.
I think multiple things can be true. Monty Williams is a good coach who had a bad year with a bad team, right?
Right.
I think all of those things can happen. I think, like you said, Monty Williams connecting with the veteran of Chris Paul, the veteran of Devin Booker, like that sort of thing works for him. Asking him to figure out Killian Hayes, who clearly is no longer an NBA pro. That's a problem. And some of the lineups that he threw out there, man, but it was like almost a function of, wait, is the roster this bad? Or is he just trying to show us how bad the roster is? Like, it was like you go from winning 17 games without Cade Cunningham to getting basically a full season of Cade Cunningham and winning 14 games. Nobody in their right mind would say that Monty Williams did a good job, but it was also a bad roster. That being said, Cade is on the way. It's not official yet, but your colleagues at The Athletic, my boy James Edwards and Sham Sharania, like closing in on a 5-year, $226 million max. It's almost a foregone conclusion, you know, on a rookie scale deal. And they bring back Tobias Harris, 2 years, $52 million. He feels like the right vet at the right time for them.
Yeah, he does. And he's motivated. You know, it's funny because Tobias remains just, you know, one of the more divisive players in the league. Yes. He's one of those guys that they got, you know, it's kind of like everything with him was through the filter of his contract. Didn't matter how well he played. Everybody, you know, was convinced that he was overpaid, and he probably was. But that is where we, you know, sometimes fall short media wise in evaluating the game, is like Tobias Harris is still a really good player.
Mm-hmm.
And so this feels like you go into a spot where they need his leadership. They need his production. And he probably will have a chip on his shoulder, because I think, you know, you look at that Sixers roster right now, they still have some money. Now, granted, not enough to hit Tobias's type of number, but like, they made a choice to, we're getting out of the Tobias Harris business. They had tried to move him for years.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is his chance, I think, to have a good chapter in Detroit. And again, I like it. You know, I think that team, I mean, listen, it's still got a long way to go
Sam.
Yeah. I mean, you and I we're spirit animals, Vinny, when it comes to like our home market, you know, having the team in our backyard that just finds new ways. That now I'm in Sacramento, the Kings have gotten a little better recently, but a whole lot of years watching these franchises stumble their way through. So we'll see where it goes in Detroit.
May 26, 2008. You know what that day is, Sam Amick?
Playoff win?
The last playoff win for the Detroit Pistons.
Yeah, yeah.
Game 4 Eastern Conference Finals, Pistons Celtics. I was in the building as one of those, you know, you had like extra writers. Yeah, Sam, because you were an extra writer at a point where you're not on the beat, but the newspaper sends everybody all hands on deck, do this feature, run these quotes, all that type of stuff. Like, that's what I was in 2008.
It's funny, as as a similar note, when we covered the Timberwolves Mavericks series, I kept having flashbacks, or even before the Timberwolves Nuggets series, flashbacks to the Western Conference Finals in, is it 03 when KG is, well, Weber misses Western, a shot Western in game
semis,
seven.
Minnesota Sacramento.
Semis, thank you. Memory's failing me there.
04, but 04 like, semis, my bad. 04 semis.
Yeah, it was the last time the Timberwolves had won a playoff series. Mm-hmm. That was, I believe, that might have been my first, like, it was one of my first NBA games I ever covered. But I was like the fifth guy on the roster, a fifth person from the Sacramento Bee newspaper. But yes, like Detroit, Minnesota, Sacramento, that is your short list of you know, organizations that went a very long time without much postseason success.
And the Pistons are a top 10 franchise. You don't think about it because, you know, they've been bad for so long. You haven't won a playoff game in 16 years. You don't have the right to call yourself anything. But they are a top 10 franchise. They have three championships. Yeah. They have more appearances in the Eastern Conference Finals since the playoffs expanded to 16 teams than anybody except for the Boston Celtics, believe it or not. Yeah. More appearances in the NBA's Final Four in the Eastern Conference than anybody except for the Celtics, and yet they look like this. Tobias Harris spent a few years in Detroit. He was part of that playoff team in 2016. He was traded to the Clippers as part of the Blake Griffin deal. You're right. We view Tobias through the lens of his contract. A player we also now view through the lens of his contract, Zach LaVine in Chicago. We forget there's a good player behind that, but people only look at the money and, oh, he's overpaid and the Chicago mess and everything else. Whoever gets him, assume, because the Bulls are going to get off him, and maybe they have to put some first-round picks with it, but whoever gets him, I think, is going to be in a really good spot, assuming that he's healthy. He had a procedure right before the trade deadline, but I think he's fully healthy now. So I think, on the vein of Tobias Harris, the contract, I think Zach LaVine is right in the next line of bad contract, so to speak, but there's a really good player and whoever gets him is going to get lucky.
I like the take. I'm admittedly surprised, Vinny. You're in the minority on that one. You know what I mean? Like, not like, cause you had like Zach LaVine, Team USA version, you know, kind of made some believers out of some people. And then next thing you know, it was back to Chicago, and we're all guilty of recency bias, but that stretch midseason when they started winning games without him, you know, that was really bad for the Zach LaVine optics. And I think, honestly, that plummeted whatever market might have been there for him at the time. Because, yeah, now, it by all accounts, you got to be attaching stuff to Zach, you know, incentivizing teams to take him. Again, in my neck of the woods, I mean, the Kings have certainly kicked that idea around, but don't seem to be in love with it. And I don't know where I stand on the question of, you know, is he going to be a winning player in his next stop? I'm very curious to see what that looks like.
I think if you have like a set culture, like, because he doesn't want to come in, you know, and I know Zach a little bit. Actually, I know Zach more than a little bit. I know Zach pretty well. He doesn't want to come into a place, and if you got a good culture, I'm going to come in and destroy it. Like, I think there's a people pleaser inside of him that people don't necessarily see just because of what has happened in Chicago. Yeah, he's got his flaws. You know, like defensively, you've got to challenge him. You've got to sort of appeal to the ego part of him of taking the challenge. But all that aside, you don't find many guys who can score at all three levels, who can shoot the way that he can shoot, and who's a pretty good distributor, pretty good on-ball defender. Like, guys like that don't grow on trees. And I think had Golden State made the move for him, our buddy Chris Haynes, former guy at Yahoo, now at Bleacher Report and Turner, he reported Chicago offered Golden State, you know, they wanted Chris Paul and Wiggins for Zach, and Golden State said no. I was shocked.
Although, in fairness to Chris, and hopefully I'm not wrong on this, my interpretation of the way that felt like the way you put it out was a little bit confusing.
Okay.
But are we sure it wasn't either or? It sounded like it might have been an either or scenario in terms of that package, which matters because,
to
your point,
it does.
Getting off of Andrew and Chris and saying no to Zach doesn't make a lot of sense. Hopefully I'm not wrong again. I think it might have been an either or thing.
Yeah, maybe so. I'll have to go back and, you know, sometimes we have to not read too much into our aggregator friends because, you know, we've all been victims of being aggregated the wrong way. Exhibit A. Our buddy with olive skin and feet of clay, you know, my brother in Christ, Joe Mazzulla. But we don't have to get into that. I knew that was going to get Sam. Look, man, I just can't help it. You got to get these jokes off while you can. The Wizards, of course, the team that can't get right. They signed Jonas Valanciunas 3 years, $30 million. I feel like they signed him to trade him. They signed him to trade him to a playoff contender for like draft picks and draft capital at some point during the line, because I still feel like he's a very valuable center.
But oh, yeah.
When you got, you know, Alex Saar, who probably isn't ready to play full-time center.
Right.
It just feels like, oh, we signed him in free agency. We're going to pay him. He's going to be a good vet for us. And then at some point for a veteran team, like, we're going to ship him off and we're going to get a couple draft picks for him.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I was kind of bummed by that one, just being honest, just because I like Jonas's game a lot. Like, I watched, I keep going back to the Kings. When the Pelicans just owned the Kings all season long, I think, what did it wind up being? There was 5-0 or 6-0 against him with the play-in stuff and mid-season stuff.
Was it in-season tournament?
Yep. And they just, it was ownage to the highest degree. And honestly, as great as some of the other guys were, CJ McCollum had a bunch of good games. Like, Jonas was probably the MVP of that matchup. And he just took it to his Lithuanian brother, Mr. Sabonis. And it was just wild to watch. And he is an old school big who, you know, we don't have a lot of guys like that in the league anymore. So, like, that was relevant basketball on the Pelicans. There's not going to be a lot of relevant basketball on the Wizards. So for his
sake, never relevant basketball with the Wizards.
Yes, I can hear Mr. Aldridge in my mind now screaming about the Wizards. But yeah, like, so for his sake, hopefully he gets moved along. As a quick side thing too, Vinny, since I know I'm the one putting this on the clock today, before we get out, I need your quick thoughts on one topic. Can I have like the final word, the good word with Vinny Goodwill at the end here?
Okay, and what you got?
Keep going. I'm throwing it in at the end.
I'm very curious where Sam is going to go with this. But for the Pelicans, it's funny that you mentioned Valanciunas. I have a saying for a guy who goes and takes another guy to the woodshed at the same spot. It's called sending a limo. Send a limo for Mr. Sabonis. Make sure he gets his ass to the arena on time, because I'm going to wear his ass out. That's what he does to Sabonis. And then Sabonis sends a limo for Anthony Davis.
Anthony Davis.
Now, the bigger question for me is, and it's weird how some guys just dominate some guys and they can't anything else. Yeah. And it has nothing to do with talent. It's just all about either mindset, matchup, whatever it is. Now I'm looking at New Orleans and I'm saying, Zion Williamson, that group there, they traded 2 first round picks to the Hawks for DeJounte Murray, who's going to, it seems like he's going to stabilize. He's not a natural point guard, but it feels like he stabilizes things a little bit more. What are they going to do with Brandon Ingram?
I think he'll move. There's some chatter now, to be sure, about Brandon. We'll see where that goes. But, you know, it doesn't seem like a contract, you know, kind of resolution is about to happen there, and it feels like it's a matter of just where he goes, not if. That's probably how I'd handicap it.
Yeah, that's probably it. So now, Sam, I'm going to give you the floor to ask me whatever you're going to ask me, and I'm bracing myself. I have no idea where you're going with this.
No, it's just another NBA topic, but I mean, what kind of guy comes on somebody else's pod and then grabs the mic? That was pretty ballsy of me, if I'm going to be honest. No, I want your thoughts on Jimmy Buckets. You know Jimmy Butler well, and I just find his situation interesting. I thought this was going to be the summer where something would happen with Jimmy. You got Pat Riley, you know, putting on his kind of godfather hat and having a few choice words for Jimmy a couple months ago publicly. Mm-hmm. Seemed like that was going to set the stage for a divorce. Now the reporting, of course, is that Jimmy's not going to sign an extension with anybody and appears destined to play out the last year of his contract. Just how do you see that situation?
I think Jimmy, it's going to be bleeped out. Jimmy is mind fucking himself. Like, I just think he's trying to get himself to a spot where mentally, all right, I got to play all 82 or something close enough to it. Like, he knows the reputation that he has is that, you know, I'm a really good player in the regular season, but when March hits and April hits, I'm turning it up and I'm turning into a Hall of Fame player. Like, that's what the numbers say. The advanced metrics say about him is that he's so much more abnormally better later in the season and into the playoffs. I think he's just trying to mentally motivate himself. There is a shelf life on Jimmy because he can exhaust you. He can wear you out, whether it's the emo Jimmy stuff and, you know what I mean, some of the stuff that he says. But I don't know if the Miami Heat will go and get a better player than Jimmy Butler. You see they extended Bam Adebayo for the max on a 3-year deal. You still got these questions about Tyler Hero. You know, where does he fit? And I still think Miami's a dumping, not a dumping ground, but they're still lurking for the next star that is unhappy. Like, they lost out on Damian Lillard. And I think a lot of this conversation changes if they got Dame. But with Jimmy, it's, look, every 3 years it's going to be something. You know what I mean? And he's entering a later stage of his career where he knows that teams are going to have questions about his health and his availability. The same questions we have about Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. All three of those guys came into the NBA around the same time. Jimmy came in 11. Paul George and Kawhi came in. Or Jimmy and Kawhi came in the 2011 draft. And Paul George came in the 2010 draft. All those guys are around the same, close to the same age. And they have the same sort of tread on their tires with the knees and different injuries. Like, Jimmy's just an acquired taste, man.
I just looked at him, man. I just cheated.
Jimmy's 35.
He's going to be 35.
Yeah, Jimmy's 35.
He'll be 35 in September.
Yep.
That's, you know, like you said, got some tread. You were the one making the valid point earlier, like, this is not the old man's game. So his chapter.
And not to be funny about it, he's a Libra, man. Them Libras is different dudes.
I would agree as a Libra myself.
Libras are borderline Geminis. As I say that, as my best friend is a Libra, and he's probably going to fuss at me when I say that. Like, what are you trying to say about me? Yeah. I'm just playing, dog. But yeah, Jimmy's a little different. But that, ladies and gentlemen, is the great Sam Amick. He's also the vice president of the Pro Basketball Writers Association. I feel like I need to put that out there because he does a lot of great
work.
That
just gets me like hate mail right there. Like, you know,
look, anybody getting hate mail, it's me. Look, I've said LeBron and nepotism, that ain't cool. I got the religious right on my ass. Like, I'm trying to figure out what.
Why
next
are you beefing
sect
with everybody, Vinny? Come on now.
I know. Who Where's should I piss love? Off next? Old people?
You already did today. The whole pod was about old people suck. That's what I heard.
That is true. Thanks to producer John and the entire team who works hard behind the scenes on this podcast. Jake and Dan, we'll be back on Wednesday for No Cap Room. And I'll be back after the holiday weekend. So deuces. Enjoy your 4th of July. And until next week, everybody be safe.